is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, brought to you by Fear the Sword, and it's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Stat Pack. Today, you heard him on Monday's show. He's back again. It's Chops from Complex Chops. What's up, my man?
What's going on? How you doing?
I'm doing good. So, we're here to answer a bunch of your Cleveland Cavaliers mailbag questions, as we do every week. Again, you can submit them to our Facebook page, on Twitter to Locked On Cavs, and to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. Every week, I will also put up a little post on the Cavs Reddit page where you can submit questions there as well. That is r/ClevelandCavs, and it'll be labeled with the date, and then I'll post the pod there as well. So we got a lot of great questions this week. We're going to start with one from Reddit from user Shihun Jay, and he writes, I know Korver has been hurt, but Flight, Young D Will, has vanished from the rotation. That lineup was tearing it up. Are they just saving it for the playoffs? And then, this was a week ago, but he said, last night, Korver back, I expect to see him playing again. Does Ty Lue know what he's doing? So let's take the second part of that first, Chops. Do you think Ty Lue knows what he's doing?
I fully think that, 100% think that Ty Lue does know what he's doing. I am a bit surprised that D Will has fallen out of the rotation, though. I guess someone had to. They're pretty deep. They're like 10, 11 guys deep. And I guess Ty Lue, he trusts veterans. And, you know, D Will is the new guy here. So, you know, that's just the way it is. I don't think he can, like, as much as I go in on Shump on a daily basis on Twitter, I don't think that they could really justify playing D Will over Shump all the time. But having said that, I would like to see the young D Will get some more minutes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think especially right now when you can help get guys rest, and Kevin Love is sort of still maybe on a minutes restriction and you have these other issues, I think you could just throw him out there and let him do some things. I think him and Channing Frye, they both have issues, but I think they have value right now, and I think Williams in certain aspects could, you know, play a good role in a series depending on who they're playing. I don't have a problem with it. I also just think Lue knows what he's doing. I think he's good at timeouts. I think he has the trust of the locker room, most importantly. And I think he's on the same page as LeBron in that the sense that they are sort of waiting for the playoffs. There are certainly potential pitfalls to that, but I think at least they're on the same page.
I think an issue is that they've had the full rotation together for two games now. Mm-hmm. They have to try and get the lineups that they want to see for the playoffs kind of going a little bit. You know, like last night was the first time that we saw Darren, Kyrie, LeBron, Korver, JR, you know? So, like, Lou's going to experiment with these lineups, so he can't really just, you know, like, throw guys out there that might not be involved in these lineups for the playoffs.
Yeah, and, I mean, we're only a few games into the Cavs going small to start the fourth. That is certainly a change, having LeBron at the five and the variations on that lineup. I that's something new that we're seeing now as well, so I think critiquing Lou's rotations is probably the biggest thing to critique him on this year, but it's also really hard to necessarily do that fully and kind of condemn him for it when he hasn't had everyone healthy and you're having to add all these guys in and figure out how Darren Williams works best and how Korver works best. Those are hard things to do on the fly when you don't have J.R. Smith there and you don't have everything sort of clicking in the same way.
For sure. Yeah, it's not easy.
All right, so next question comes from JimRun85 on Twitter. He asks, is it me or does it seem like Kyrie is the main reason for the team's defensive struggles? He's been putting in no effort in 1-on-1 D, and I feel that leaves everyone else on D scrambling because of him. LeBron looked like he wanted to strangle him last night, and last night is in reference to the Cavs game against the Wizards on Saturday. So I think a part of this is Kyrie. I think some of it is the effort of the team right now. I think some of it is the pick and roll defense. I think when Kevin Love has moments where he comes out too high and misses guys and he isn't using his body to slow guys down, which he necessarily shouldn't be doing right now, that's going to impact things. And Kyrie, he's never going to be a really, really great defender. I think he's 25 now. He certainly could get better and hit sort of a baseline level of quality, but he's never going to be a lockdown guy. But when he's actually putting an effort and he's chasing guys around screens, that goes a long way of just making it harder for guys to get open shots. It can be hard. I think in transition he could be better. But I think that isn't necessarily the main reason, but it's a big reason.
People love the blame stuff on Kyrie, man. I get that he's a minus defender, but like you can't watch the Cavs and say, oh, this is all on Kyrie. The defense is bad because of Kyrie. You know, it's like, and I saw people on Twitter during that Wizards game, it's like, oh, Wall's busting Kyrie. You know what? John Wall makes, like, he shoots, what, 30-something percent from three? Okay, he was hitting shots. Like, LeBron leads the team. Like, when he's engaged, they're all engaged on defense. I said this on the last pod. And you know what? Like, so I think it's unfair to just blame this solely on Kyrie. He's an easy target because he's not a good defender. But you know what? He makes up for it in other ways.
Yeah, I think his offensive value is certainly high, and I do think we did see last year that he was better on defense when it mattered. You know, yeah like he's going to put in more effort in the playoffs. I do think him in pick and roll defense is something that I think could be just functionally better. And I also just understand, we talked about this on Monday, the Cavs are just going to be frustrating right now, and you just sort of have to, I think, accept it and just internalize it that it's probably going to get better when the playoffs start.
It's like when a team does what they did last season, it's going to be impossible for them to stay focused, especially in March when they're in a portion of the schedule that they've been dreading the entire season. They're playing so many games in March, most of them on the road, and you know what? They're not going to be fully locked in as they should, and it's not something that we can really hammer at them, even if they are slipping in the standings a bit.
Correct. Next question comes from Reddit. I'm not going to read the name because it's not safe for work. But what are some lineups for the Cavs that you think we could see more of, and why?
I really like LeBron at five lineups, but the only twist I would do is I think you need another big out there with him. I think you need Tristan or Love out there with three. Well, Love's a shooter, but then three more shooters is very interesting to me, like a Kyrie, Darren, JR, or Kyrie, JR, Korver type thing with LeBron and then either Love or Tristan. I think those are going to be the lineups the Cavs might not only close with in the playoffs, but are they going to be really, really deadly throughout the playoffs?
I agree with that as well. I like, in if you're going to go all in on offense, I like the Kyrie, Darren Williams pairing. It allows LeBron to do some fun stuff. I like the idea of him maybe being a four. I think who you play at the three in that lineup is interesting, because I think RJ might be the best fit with LeBron if you're going to go two smaller guys on the wing. But yeah, putting Korver out there as the best shooter, or J.R. Smith is maybe the best option. I think my personal favorite that of a potential closing game lineup against like a Golden State, if Golden State goes their small lineup to end a game, I really kind of like the idea of going Kyrie, JR, Korver, LeBron, RJ. I think that's something I could really get behind. I think, you know, Love potentially could be subbed in there in certain instances. There are rebounding concerns, there are defensive limitations, but I think that might be a really interesting way to match up with the Golden State, because I think there, yes, you're going to ask Kyrie to defend Curry, but you're going to have the switchability of LeBron and RJ versus Draymond and KD. You're going to have JR and Korver. JR can handle Clay. Kyrie could probably slide on Clay if they really needed to do that. And I think Korver can hang with Iguodala. So I think the switchability of having someone else that can body up KD, we saw that on Christmas Day, I think could be really valuable.
A lot of people aren't talking about this, but I'm really, really liking the way that RJ's been playing the past 2 to 3 weeks. I think he looks fresh. You know, he's got his hops back. I think he was really just sandbagging it for about the first 4 months of the season. But he's so important going into the playoffs, I think, because you mentioned his versatility. You know, because he's a guy who can get physical, who can get to the rim. His shooting's been coming back a bit. So I think that he's, yeah, definitely really important in a guy that they can slide into that three spot.
Another guy who has said on the road trip and pod that he is not super interested in going hard all the time. So that, I mean, take that for what it is.
Exactly.
He to me is going to be him and JR to me, if we're talking non big three, are probably the two most important role players when it comes to the playoff run, I think.
And then Tristan too.
I mean, Tristan obviously, but I think, like, if we're looking at, like, the wings, I think RJ and JR needing to be good defenders and shooters kind of is going to be more, like, I think Korver is going to be huge.
I'm super interested to keep seeing Darren Williams out there too. Him and LeBron already, you can see it to where that bench, remember last year in the playoffs, especially the Toronto series, when that bench lineup came in and, like, Toronto just had no answers. I think that we're going to see something like that again with Darren Williams running the show, and it's just going to be something where a team just cannot stop them.
The Darren Williams LeBron pick and roll synergy is already there. Like, it's crazy how in tune those two already are. I think, you know, Darren had a foundation of running the pick and roll with the Jazz way back in the day. It's a skill he's really good in that situation. He rates out very well in that based on any metric you want to look at. I think you certainly maybe are losing a little bit on defense, but I think the offensive fit there with him running a pick and roll versus, like, Dele running a pick and roll with LeBron, those are very different worlds.
Darren's such a good shooter. Like, he's just – and I think he's holding back a little – see, that's the thing. Like, people don't want to hear it, but the Cavs, I think, are just holding so much back right now because you can see the sets, but they don't go fully out and, like, fully unlock everything. Like, you see that set, and there's so many options from it, but they never really – and during the Wizards game, they put Korver with that lineup as well, right?
Yes, they did use that in that certain situation.
I think he got around, like, maybe three corner threes. I think he hit, like, a few, you know? So I think it's going to be such an interesting thing to watch in the playoffs, how they kind of figure out what lineups they want to just go with at teams.
100% agree. I think certain series are going to yield different things. Mm-hmm. And depending on how teams, you know, if they go big, I mean, you're going to get more of Tristan and Love, which is still a very, very good lineup, no matter how you want to put it.
The thing is, if you look at, like, the Wizard, like, the three teams that, and they could play two out of the three teams, the Wizards, Raptors, and Celtics, none of them have overpowering centers, really. I mean, Toronto has Jonas and Serge Ibaka, but they're not really overpowering in the sense where the Cavs would have to adjust to playing a big. So I think, like, the possibilities of these virtual lineups are really going to come out in the second and third rounds of the playoffs.
Correct. Next question. I'm going to let you take this one first because I don't know how to answer this, really. It comes from dguns22 on Twitter. Has LeBron become the scapegoat for the sports media world when it comes to the NBA?
Has he become it? I think he's been it, right? Like,
yeah, probably.
The thing about if this is a thing about, like, the rest and everything, I think LeBron definitely, especially the NBA, like if anything goes wrong, they blame LeBron, especially, like, the Skip Baylesses of the world. Like it was never a thing when Pop was resting Duncan and Parker and Ginobili during big games, but LeBron sits out one game when Kyrie and Love weren't going to play in the game, and it would have been unfair to play him, and the world melts down. You know, it's like LeBron he's such a figure that and he's polarizing, and people will just always have kind of a slight against him. And it's something I saw on Twitter. He's the closest thing we've ever seen to Jordan, and I think because of that, a lot of people will try and take him down a little bit just because he is that closest thing we've seen. So yeah, I definitely think that he's kind of always been that NBA scapegoat and will probably continue to be that for the rest of his career.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I think the resting thing is certainly an indication of that. I think the resting thing is certainly kind of put on him, and he's the big example of it, as are the Cavs and the Warriors would be too, because they're the two most hot profile teams. But I think LeBron, his attitude on stuff, is sort of going to shape a lot of things, and that's just kind of where we're at.
And the thing is, like, when I interviewed Chris Broussard earlier this year, and we talked about LeBron, and one thing that he noticed is LeBron's not holding back anymore. He's being very vocal in what he says, whether it's going at Charles Barkley or defending Charles Oakley. You know, he's not holding back anymore, and he's letting his opinions be known because he knows how much power he yields in the league, which is a good thing, because for a while there he wasn't doing that. And you know what? He's ready to take on the responsibility of that, which I think is really good.
Yes, 100%, and with that as well. Next question also comes from Twitter, from Adam Eaton at Eaton AM. He asks, first, he has two questions, and the second one I'll just take solo on this. But out of who do you think / want the Cavs to retain next year from the six new guys plus City? So remember, 17-man rosters next year. So this, you could theoretically keep a bunch of guys. Cool. Out of the guys, the new guys, that would be Korver, Larry Sanders,
both D Wills.
Who are we missing there? I think two other guys, unless it's those four. K Felder may be included in there.
Yeah,
a six. And did they sign anybody else? I can't even really remember if they signed anybody else.
The past month has been such a blur with the Cavs.
Yeah, even back to the summer is a blur. But, okay, this is bad podcasting. But
Yeah.
Out of those guys, I think Seti is sort of their first-round pick for next year, so I'd expect him to be on the roster. I don't think Felder is going anywhere. I think unless they just think Sanders has been a waste of their time, he should be at least in training camp, and we'll see how that goes after a summer. Maybe he plays in Vegas. I think that might be a good move for him. The D-Wills are interesting because Darren could probably go get more money somewhere else.
I think Darren will probably go back to the Jazz. I think that's kind of like the undertone of kind of what happened with his buyout, and it, like, there was interest of him going to the Jazz. So I really don't think they'll sign Darren or Korver, but I think D-Will and Larry, the younger D-Will and Larry Sanders, will be the ones they bring back.
I think Korver might be back.
Wendy mentioned that the Pelicans are already kind of making some roster moves to bring him in.
Here's the thing, though. He talked about pretty early about him enjoying the culture. He sold the culture right away. I think he's in a point in his career where he kind of wants to pursue winning. Is he a guy who might, in terms of, like, New Orleans could be enticing to him? But he's 35. Like, his title window is not super wide open. I think there's a good chance you could get him back next year in a pretty good deal. Out of the two big additions, so him and Darren, I think he's more likely to come be back next year.
For sure. Yeah, I think Darren probably ends up in Utah next year.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Keep things sourced out, but just the way that everybody talked about the trade deadline and his buyout, I think it kind of seemed like they had, like, maybe a wink-wink type situation where it's like, okay, go try and get your ring with the Cavs, and then we'll see you next year.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think a lot depends on if they win a title. If they win a title, Korver might say, oh, I got one. Let me go maybe get my last big payday, because the Cavs aren't going to really be able to offer any money to anybody. I think younger D-Will is the most interesting person, because I think that – I don't want to speculate too much, but maybe he makes Shump, you know – expendable a little bit, who knows, but you know, he's still very young, and I think he could be an interesting guy.
I think if they lose Korver, Shumpert becomes a lot less movable, just because it'd be harder to replace a wing there. The thing with the Pelicans about Korver is, like, I think if they signed Drew, they would have a hard time carving out a lot of money, so I don't know if they could, like, godfather him, you know. I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I will say this, I think Felder, especially because of the 17-man roster, will be on the team next year. I think, like, you on the road trip and pod, you hear RJ talk about how much they like him. Like, he does a lot. Like, the stuff I see him do in Canton is really, really promising. Like, he's very fast. He's very athletic. He sees the floor well. The guy can get his own shot. He makes a lot of good reads. He's cutting down on his turnovers in the D-League, which is a really good sign. But how the Cavs feel about his development, really up until the free agency starts, because free agency is going to really take place before free agency, like, summer league takes place after free agency, so they're not going to get to see how he is in July, really. Yeah. How they decide to approach the backup point guard spot, whether that's keeping Darren, whether that's going to find somebody else, is going to be really telling about how they feel about Kay Felder in his second year.
Yeah, definitely. The backup point guard, like last summer, is going to be a big thing going into this summer. And, yeah, I'm interested about Seti, too, because Seti could – I mean, they still have to sign him. That's the thing. Like, they still have to give him a deal. I remember when Mirotić came over a few years ago, there was a lot of talks about what kind of contract he would get. So they still have to would sign Seti. So I think that we could still maybe see Seti traded this summer, but it would be interesting to see him come over.
Yeah, especially because he's not tied to a first-round draft pick scale because he was a second-round pick. So, that's our mission as well.
For any amount of money. So it could – like the negotiations could be a little tougher there. And but if he's determined to come over, that could be a good trade piece. Maybe that you combine with something else to address, you know, backup point guard or whatever. So,
yeah.
I think the Cavs are going to have an interesting summer for sure, as they always do. Yeah. LeBron's under contract, though. You don't have to worry about LeBron. So.
Yeah, all the big guys under contract. I agree. It'll be really interesting to see what they do because I do think they'll need to reinforce certain areas in smart ways. And if they win the title, I mean, that kind of creates a whole other set of circumstances as well. Adam also asked about the possibility of Kay Felder and Larry Sanders playing in the D League playoffs. So I got a response from Sean Wyatt. I asked him this. He's the PR guy, Mr. Jack of all trades down in Canton. Shout out to Sean. Really, really nice guy. He's told me that anyone is eligible to be assigned through the D League playoffs, even as they spill into the NBA playoffs. The only time it gets murky if it's a guy who's actually called up from the D League. So in terms of Felder and Larry Sanders, two guys signed with the Cavs. That aren't charged players first, they're Cavs players with Cavs contracts. They could, if the Cavs decide they want to send them down to Canton at any point, as long as the Charge are in the playoffs, which starts, their regular season ends on April 1st, they could do that as well. So theoretically, the Cavs could still have Larry and Kay getting some D League reps during the beginning parts of the playoffs if the Cavs so choose. Do you like the idea of them potentially playing in the D League playoffs?
I think Felder for sure, right? Like, I think that's fine. That would give him some experience. As we talked about with Larry, I mean, I think it's just – I feel like they're not being – I feel like Ty Lue's playing this one real close with Seth with Larry, and I think I would expect him to be with the Cavs the whole – because they're already trying to get Larry within the Cavs organization as much as possible. Like, they sent him to Charlotte just to travel with the team a little bit. So I think they're just trying to get him interlooped with the team as much as possible. So I think that's going to be very interesting. But, I mean, any reps for Larry Sanders are good. You know, as we talked about, his timing is the most important thing. So that, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I think him just playing in the D-League would be good. Like, I think if you're – the return of the investment is going to come next year. So I think D-League reps for him in any shape or form would be good.
When are the Canton playoffs starts?
I'm not exactly sure the start date, but the regular season ends April 1st, and the Cavs' regular season ends April 12th. So the Cavs would have that gap. The Charge would have, I think, a three-game series to start off. They clinched a playoff berth over the weekend, so they're going to be in the playoffs.
Gotcha.
So that's for sure. They're going to have that option if they do what they do. So next question comes from the SportsGuy23 on Reddit. He asks, what is the key to getting the Cavs turned around defensively? To me, it starts with the pick and rolls and how the guards defend the point of attack. Switch and the third guy doesn't rotate back on the end. And Fry/Thompson or Buse getting to the hole defending the position. Trap? We have the roll man for the opposing defense force the decision maker, like we saw against Houston. Nene caliber players will eat you. And overall, guards must be more aggressive and fight the high screen over top and recover. What's your take? So I think it is effort. I think, you know, there are going to be limitations with the Cavs' personnel. I do think that you just have some things that are going to get better if they're putting in maximum effort, and certain things if guys can get rest. Tristan being rested in particular is going to clean up a lot of the issues you're seeing on the back end. He's had a really rough 2-3 weeks, and I think some of that is just fatigue and what if he's facing other any issues that we're not aware of.
Yeah, I think Reddit user, whatever his name was, I think he made some good points. I think that's all kind of what it is, but a lot of that comes down to effort and scheme. And, you know, I'll take Ty Lue's word for it that they have some stuff up their sleeve. And I guess we'll just see it in the playoffs when it comes out, when they have time to really lock in on an opponent and see what their opponents are doing and really scout out what they want to do defensively.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about how they might be comfortable with just kind of revamping their defense come the playoffs, right? Like, I think that's a really interesting thing. And I can understand if you're, like, a hardcore Cavs fans out there who's, you know, commenting after the sword or whatever, like, if you're going to be stressed out by that. Mm-hmm. But if they're practicing it and they don't have a lot of practice and maybe they've been working on it for longer than we know, that to me is kind of interesting to see if how they would approach that.
Jason Lloyd wrote that, right, in his final thoughts of,
like, yeah, he said that. Yeah, he said that Lou's kind of been teasing this for like a while. That this isn't something they're just like trying to do now. Like they've been thinking about this for a while, which is a really interesting thing. And there is a history of teams that were NBA champions that sucked defensively and then turned it up. You had the '93 Bulls did it, the '95 Rockets, and the 2001 Lakers, if I'm not mistaken, are the three teams that really are examples of this being possible. It's just not something that happens every year.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the similarities, especially between this team and the 2000-2001 Lakers, there are a lot of similarities kind of in how they went about the season following a championship. So, but, you know, that Lakers team went on to only lose one playoff game and won the title. So we'll see what happens here.
So, interesting enough, pregame Saturday against Washington, Greg Schwartz, shout out to Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report, asked Lou about the similarities between the Cavs and the Lakers.
Yeah.
I will actually play that clip really quick.
Let's do it. T. Lou on the team, by the way.
Yeah, T. Lou on that team, which is like a very interesting thing.
It's when he got stepped over by AI. That was the only game they lost.
You were on the 2000-2001 Lakers that you guys won the title, but in the regular season they were 21st in defensive efficiency. Right now you guys are around that same mark. Was there a confidence with that Lakers group that even though defensively you weren't top 5, top 10, you had those superstars that could maybe overcome that in the playoffs? Was that there, and would you say that part of that is here with your Cavs group as well?
I wouldn't say it's the same, but you know, we do have two dominant players that, you know, offensively that were pretty good, and you know, defensively, once we get locked in the playoffs, you know, we gotta be right. And so we're just trying to move the right path. You know, need some defensive consistency to finish out the season and carry it over to the playoffs. But as far as the same, it was different. You know, I mean, we had a lot of old guys like we do now, but you know, other than that, it's different.
Is there anything you could take from Phil Jackson and what he did with that group that you could bring to this experience now?
Well, just, you know, in the playoffs, being a lot, you know, one team, and you know, an example of what you want to do every single night. And I play in different teams that have different point guards, a different style of play. You just lock in on one team and see what you want to do. And we know this group has it in us, you know, to lock in the team defensively. You know, Golden State last year, know, all of them to 140%, I think, 3 or 4 games, you know, probably the best offensive team in NBA history. So we can do it in the sense, so we just got to start doing it together.
Next question is also a defensive question. Douglas Philippi asks a slightly different question. Do the Cavs simply need to put in more effort, or is their defense just not that good? I think there is limitations to the defense. I mean, it's telling that last year they were 10th. In defense for the year, 12th after the All-Star break and all this, and they're 29th post the All-Star break, now 22 overall in the year in terms of defensive rating. But I think they could be better, and I think effort's a big part of that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, defense is so hard to evaluate, honestly.
It's so hard to evaluate. It's like, oh, man, like no one wants to hear it, but yeah, it's just like it's effort and sometimes it's personnel and – sometimes it's just shots are falling. It's just such a random thing to evaluate, especially during the regular season when context, like it. A lot of you, if you're following me on Twitter, you saw that I got into a very big thing about context that started with context when it comes to the NBA and how you evaluate and talk about teams. So I just think that so many people leave context out of all of this. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's just like a lot we got to kind of consider on all sides. It's a pretty fascinating kind of thing going on there. All right, last question this week comes from email via Slade. He asks, if J.R. Korver and R.J. get most of the minutes on the wing in the playoffs, should D-Will, I think it is Derek Williams, because I think Darren isn't really included in this, or Shumpert get the others' minutes? Chops, I'm going to let you just tee this up, because I know you got thoughts on Shump.
Man, it's crazy, because, like Shump, he's a nice guy, and I've, like, premiered his music before, but, man, he's frustrating. But I think, as I said before, I think that Lou has a thing for veterans that he trusts, and he trusts them on Shumpert. You know, like, people want to, like, I rag on Shump all the time, but in game seven of the playoffs, Shump played defense and Shump hit a 4-point play, you know, and so while his shot has fallen off the face of the earth in recent weeks, I think that these minutes will still be going to Shumpert, because I feel that Lou trusts Shumpert more than younger D Will right now. And that's just, you know, we've seen, if younger D Will is not playing right now in the regular season when they're trying to figure out playoff stuff, then it would be hard for me to see him as like a, oh, I'm just going to throw him out there in the playoffs. Like, I could definitely see young D Will playing in the playoffs, but I think that something would have to happen for that to happen. So I think Shump is still the guy who's going to take up those extra wing minutes.
Yeah, I'll say two things to wrap this up. I think Shumpert, they're comfortable with him guarding point guards. They've tried to do that with Derek Williams. I think Lou likes having Shumpert do that. I think they don't really like having JR do it for reasons that I'm not quite sure of. But I think they like doing it with Shump. Two, yeah. Shumpert to me is frustrating because if you're looking at his stats this year, across the board, his shooting numbers are kind of the best he's had. Like, he's shooting from three at a higher, at about 40. He's shooting from the field at about 42%. That's the highest he's ever been at. He's shooting up at 37.4% from three. That would be the highest he shot from three since his second year in the league, back when he was 22, when he was with the Knicks. And it's on about almost a full attempt more per game that he's at that. So, like, he's functionally doing okay. He's, you know, he's having a deep, like, a good year by his standards offensively, and it's still really not that good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, he's like, I wanted to believe, and we all wanted to believe when he was making all those threes, but then it's like, man, did he come crashing down to earth?
Yeah, the Shumpert 3-and-D thing is not really a thing. Like, I think we just need to, like, stop calling him a 3-and-D guy.
The thing is, what frustrates me is, like, sometimes he gets lost on defense, so it's like, what? He's just a three.
Yeah, and then even then, like, is he a three?
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's like they have him bring the ball up sometimes. Yeah. It's very weird.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing.
It is. I think the wing rotation, and, you know, like I think we mentioned earlier, the one thing you can bring on Ty Lue this year is, like, the rotations have been kind of funky. He's dealt with a lot of injuries, so, you know, that's bound to happen. But I think the wing rotations going into the playoffs is going to be the most interesting thing to watch, especially how you balance LeBron playing the four or the five in some of these things, like who gets plugged in. And I think it's going to be the most important thing to watch. And it's going to probably go on matchups with who they're playing a lot, but, you know, it will be interesting to see.
Yeah. Chops, I'm going to ask you one last thing before we let you go, just in your own comfort level as someone who follows the Cavs all the time and is a Cavs fan, what would be in terms of seeding and then three playoff opponents that you would like to see the Cavs go through in these? What is your ideal path for the Cavs?
Okay, I'm just going to assume that they're going to be the two seed because I'm just not going to assume that they're going to be the one seed. I'm going to guess that Boston catches them. So as the two seed, I would say give me Indiana in the first round because that would be – I know the Cavs have issues going to Indiana sometimes. They don't have a lot of wins over there in their building over the years. But I think that that's such an easy, short trip that the veterans like RJ and Channing would love it. Like, they'd be in love with only having to go to Indiana in the first round. So then I guess the second round would be you're going to play the Wizards if you're the two seed probably because they're going to be the three seed. So give me the Wizards, and then – I think we play the Raptors in the Eastern Conference Finals again. I think that the Raptors beat the Celtics.
So you're assuming Lowry is healthy, basically.
I guess it all depends on Lowry being healthy. But, I mean, there hasn't been any indications that he's not coming back, right? I mean, like, he was supposed to come back to the playoffs.
Yeah, he was so beat up. That's kind of my concern.
Yeah, it was weird that he played in the All-Star game and the three-point shootout but had the wrist injury. Like, that's just – I can't believe that. If that happened to someone on the Cavs, like Kyrie or something, I'd be furious.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine how Raptors fans feel. Yeah. But if Lowry's healthy, I still think that the Raptors beat the Celtics because I think the additions of Serge Ibaka and PJ Tucker plus what they already are is just kind of a better matchup.
Yeah. I'm going to answer this in a different way. I'm not going to answer this in terms of just like a function. I just kind of going to go through what I would most be interested in seeing. So yeah. I kind of hope they play the Bucks in the first round. That would be an annoying series, but I kind of want to see Giannis again. Like, I'd like to see that. The Heat would be a, The Heat would be a secondary answer just because I'm here for the petty Dion stuff. Like, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
But I don't know how likely that it is. The second round is sort of interesting because I kind of feel like Washington's going to hold on to that 3 seed. I'm not sure Toronto's getting there. I do also kind of agree with you. I kind of feel like the Cavs are headed towards being the 2 seed. I think you get Cavs-Wizards, which is the series I want the most. The games that they've played this year have been so fun. Like, I just really am down for that being a thing.
And I think that might be the toughest series that they would play in the playoffs.
I 100% agree.
I'm not saying they would lose.
Yeah.
But I think it would be just the way that the Wizards play. They play so up-tempo, like with Wall and Beal, that I think it would be tough.
Yeah, and Wall, because he's a good defender, is a lot harder to punish than Isaiah. Like, Isaiah could do a lot of the same stuff for Boston in terms of pushing the pace, but Boston, A, plays differently, and Isaiah is just like, Isaiah's gonna, I think that how Isaiah gets attacked in the playoffs to me is gonna be really interesting.
And that's why I think, why I would take Toronto over Boston if Lowry's healthy, because I think teams can game plan for Isaiah so easily in the playoffs. We've seen it in the past 2 years.
Yeah.
Oh?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Toronto, if they're healthy, is the second best team in the East.
Yes, 100%. Like, they added Serge Ibaka and PJ Tucker to the team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they beat the Cavs, but I think if they're healthy, Lowry, I think Kyrie is, like, in a vacuum. Like, I would take Kyrie, but I think just in terms of his resume over the past couple of years, he's been the best point guard in the East. Like, Kyrie's injuries and stuff impact that, obviously. But I think Lowry's he's been so good when he's healthy. And I think he's a little beat up. They need him. They're not nearly the same team without him. But, like, it'd be a big thing for them to get him back. And if he's good, like, I think they'd beat Boston.
That's the thing. Like, if Lowry's not healthy and they play the Bucks in the first round, that would be a tough series for them, I think. So, like, Lowry's health determines a lot for the landscape of the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, because if you're just looking at the standings right now, like, the top four are insulated from the rest. But Atlanta is in a free fall. The Bucks are right there. The Pacers and Heat are all right there. Even the Bulls and the Pistons still have some life.
Yep.
Not much, but yeah.
Playing the Hawks in the first round would be cruel again, because it'd be a sweep probably if we were the 2 seed. They were 7.
Yeah.
So, but like, beating up on the Hawks is always a good way to get the Cavs in playoff form, you know?
Yeah, it's tradition from the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of become tradition. But Chops, man, thank you so much for answering, coming on the mailbag. We'll get you on and back soon. It was way too long since the last time you were on. But just remind everyone out there where they can find you on the internet.
Complex.com, doing my thing. And then on Twitter, it's pchops, PCHOPZ _ on Twitter.
Yeah, he's currently, you probably know him from getting in a couple internet feuds. You had the big one, which we won't get into, and then his one with CS, the robot himself. With Av, so.
Oh, man, me and Av. It's all love with me and Av. Not the other one, though.
Yeah, not the other one at all. Chops, last thing, just out of curiosity. No. Best song on More Life?
Ooh, Free Smoke's probably my favorite, but best song is probably Do Not Disturb.
Yeah, I think you're right. I like the Portland Super Goofy. I enjoy it.
I love the flute.
Yeah, I love the flute, too. Like, Travis Scott's, like, a little over the top for me on that. But I like Travis Scott, and the Quavo Michael Phelps thing is incredible.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a really good project. I've been listening to it a lot.
Yeah, I also subscribe to the theory that, like, you're gonna hear More Life. Like, even though I think I'm like really excited for that Kendrick project that's coming out.
Yeah,
like, More Life is gonna get played in arenas, and you're gonna hear that for months. And like, Kendrick is gonna not. That's not like you're not gonna hear Part 4 played like before a playoff game in an arena.
No, for sure not.
Like, you're not gonna get the Donald Trump Russia diss song.
Yeah, right.
Blade in the arena. But Chops, man, thank you so much. Listeners, we'll be back tomorrow previewing Cavs-Bulls. The Cavs are getting a primetime Bulls game, which, if history goes well, you know, typically the Bulls are somehow just functional on those nights, but we're going to preview that game. And then, again, submit your mailbag questions for next week. Our contest is still going on, so please go back to Monday's show if you want to get the deets on that and leave that rating and review, and maybe you could win a really good Cavs book. So we'll talk to you again tomorrow.